The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Still in the chat there, Miss Sharon Inglefield. Hello, good afternoon, Miss. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having Arrive Alive on your program this afternoon.
All right. Thank you very much. Arrive Alive. How long has Arrive Alive been in existence?
Actually, this December would be 20 years.
Wow.
20 years in existence.
20
years. It doesn't seem that long, but it's 20-year-old NGO.
Mm-hmm. And what actually made you, start this NGO, Arrive Alive? Was it a personal experience?
I didn't actually start the NGO. It was started by Brent Batson and Kirk Weith when they saw the carnage on the nation's roads.
Right, right.
And active in their own individual businesses on the roads all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them working for multinational companies where health and safety were extremely important. And their mantra was zero injuries, zero lives lost, mm-hmm. whether it was on the rigs, whether it was on the roads, it was the same black mark against them if they lost any of their employees at all. So that these two guys, having worked with the multinationals, understood what road safety was all about and started Arrive Alive 20 years ago this December. I joined in 2009 when my son was killed at a signalized intersection when someone ran the red light. Son was 25 years old, like every other young man, had a host of friends from every walk of life, loved fast driving. In those days, we did everything, because of a lack of education. And as I could tell people, I picked up on Kirk Waite's mantra, fix your roads, you fix your country, and we've been allowed to be lawless for too long.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is what's happening in Trinidad now. We have been allowed to be lawless for far too long.
Yeah, definitely.
So that's my story. And, he was my only son. And
wow.
I've just been reaching out in my pain and my grief. I got hold of Kirk and Brent, and they helped me along. I owe a lot to them because those were some very dark days.
Yeah. Of course, it must be very difficult. Couldn't imagine your pain as a mother. Having your son, having somebody you love taken away from you like that could be much more difficult, 10 times more difficult than actually if they're sick or they're dying, you know they're going to die. But just suddenly having somebody you love taken away from you that kind of way, it must be very traumatic.
Very much so.
Mm-hmm.
But thank you very much for your sentiments.
Yeah, because these things keep happening. So what in the 20 years have you seen a change? I know Arrive Alive has been there educating the people. Have you seen a change? Have you been able to make a dent? Are things getting better? Things getting worse? What can be done?
All right, so there are many, many gaps. And first of all, we were one of 10 countries in the world that had a 50% decrease in deaths during the decade to Action for Road Safety 2011 to 2020. So we actually reduced fatalities on the roads by 50%. And there's actually a World Health Organization Global Status Report 2023 that talks about Trinidad and Tobago being one of those 10 countries. So we are getting somewhere. The behavior is changing in some realms. We are seeing more and more people hiring taxis designated as sober driver and trying to educate themselves about road safety, because there's a lot to be done. There are a lot of gaps to close, but education and training is key. And that's one of the things that we feel that we have closed the gap substantially, that a lot of the stakeholders now clearly understand what needs to happen. It's a pity it didn't happen 20 years ago when the world moved towards a proper transportation plan, a proper road safety plan, and we use the benchmarks instead of reinventing the wheels of those countries in particular, the Scandinavian countries, Canada, Australia in particular, and the UK. Those countries have the best road safety record in the world, and it's a pity we didn't move the mark 20 years ago. But education and training, there's a lot to be done still. Everybody has to live up to their responsibility. Drivers need to be educated. We need to make defensive driving mandatory and as part of the licensing process. So the drivers understand risk at all levels. They understand journey management, planning your day, plan, especially with Christmas and Carnival coming, ensuring that you've planned your day ahead, knowing there's heavy traffic, and therefore understanding the risk if we speed because we're late. So mandatory defensive driving incorporated into the driver's program for all classes of drivers is a must, and that needs to happen as soon as possible. We need to also do medicals and eye tests. We have drivers who've had strokes and are still driving and can hardly walk and talk. We have a lot of drivers on the road that are not seeing properly. We need to have a proper national, revamping of the criteria by which we get our licenses, and therefore testing periodically when we go for renewals. That is critical. And I know the Optometrist Society, plus the Blind Welfare in particular, have reached out to us over the years. We have written letters to our leaders, and we need to get the ball rolling on those things in particular, because eyesight at 10% in two eyes is unacceptable for a driver to be on the roads. And that is still happening. And I'm still getting reports of that happening up until today. So there's a lot to be done in education and training. But we're seeing a big change in the police. Brent Batson went over, resigning from Arrive Alive to training the highway and traffic branch. And of course, we got the seatbelt legislation, we got the speed gun legislation, we got the breathalyzer legislation. We got an, well, of course, the penalty points, but as you saw what's happening with the penalty point system, the TTPS, as well as the Ministry of Works and Transport, had a special meeting yesterday afternoon, and a number of drivers, the TT posts cannot track down. So we have a number of drivers on our roads with a huge amount of penalty points, two of whom died in the last week on our roads, who had an abundance of penalty points, but TT Post can't track them down. So the law now has to be changed. That do we embarrass those drivers? Do we publish their names in the newspapers if they're not going in and giving in their license, if they're not at home and therefore not accepting mail when their licenses are to be suspended? The law is going to have to be changed. And unfortunately, that is again a gap that has to be bridged. And it means time once again to embarrass those drivers into handing in their license and retraining them, really getting through to them, changing their mindset, explaining to them the consequences of their actions and the risks. And as I've just said, two drivers who had suspended licenses were killed in the last week. I
Right.
mean, that's tragic.
Yeah.
Tragic to
Well,
think
you
that.
mentioned yeah, you mentioned suspended. There are a lot of people while driving with out with suspended license, people driving without insurance, just taking the risk, you know, and not this sort of thing. But we have I know you mentioned the fast cars. Right now we have some cars, I don't want to be not gonna call any names, but there are some vehicles that are being sold in Trinidad and Tobago, and people are allowed to modify their cars to go fast. And sometimes I wonder why would somebody want to have a car fast like that. I mean, we know we have the drag racing that takes place on Wallerfield, but I'm talking just have a regular car that goes fast. I mean, is there some legislation that should be taking place if we do go to that? Will people
Absolutely.
be saying that,
Absolutely.
taking about their rights or something? But what do you think about that?
Absolutely. There's no way these fast cars should be on the roads. There's a track for that. And the drivers on the track often will tell you a lot of training goes into driving on the track. So there's no way that training is mirrored on the roads. We're seeing too many pedestrians this year dying. I mean, as you can see, we've had an 83% increase in fatalities, and that is speed. Whether the cars are fast cars or whether the drivers are just disobeying the speed limits, driving too fast on the main roads, in where businesses, residential neighborhoods, where they have hospitals, where they have market. I mean, drivers are just driving too fast, regardless of the type of car they're driving. The roads are not meant for speed. The roads are not in best.
Hello, Miss Ingerfield. You went out there. Hi, we seem to have a little technical difficulty. Seem to have dropped out in single field.
Best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio, Freedom 106.5.
So I have Miss Single Field online. Hello?
Hello?
Yes, okay, yes. So if you had to do it on this phone, we'll do it on this phone, no problem. All right,
so where did you lose me?
Yeah, I lost you, but I just asked you about the cars and stuff, and you were going over the fast cars. You might have started, because as soon as you got into it, we got cut off. Yeah, so the fast cars that they're selling here, and people are allowed to drive, you were saying that they don't belong on the roads.
Well, certainly we should not have cars that are encouraging the speeding that already exists, mm-hmm. because we've had a huge increase of 21% of lives lost, 115 people have died this year on the nation's roads.
Mm-hmm.
So we certainly want people to change their mindset and decrease their speed and adjust the speed to road conditions. We already know a lot of our roads are not in good condition. We lack barriers. The pavements are not good. The markings are not good. We have a lot of pedestrian traffic. So we need to decrease our speed. So anything that encourages drivers to speed is not a good practice, not a healthy practice.
Yeah.
You know, it's unfortunate that the minister increased the speed limit this year, because really and truly, I think it's a wrong message to send to drivers.
Mm-hmm. All right, definitely. Now, I mean, some people might say, well, listen, I drive fast. I'm a careful driver. A lot of people blame her. Well, how about drivers that are intoxicated? Of course, you would have the data. What does percentage of data of intoxicated drivers really get into accidents?
I don't have the up-to-date data on that right now, but certainly we have a high percentage of drivers still drinking and driving.
Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you've eaten extremely well that day, protein, and you're in the right frame of mind, you're only having one drink per hour, you're doing medicals, etc., so your liver is in a good, healthy, working liver, it is critical that you designate a sober driver or call a taxi, simply because drinking and driving is a criminal offense. So you're not going to just get a ticket. You could be locked up. You could stand jail time. It's at the discretion of the magistrate. And you can lose your privilege to drive. Mm-hmm. So we appeal, with Christmas coming in particular and Carnival, we appeal to all drivers to designate a sober driver, call a taxi, plan your journey, make sure that with all the fets coming up, etc., that you have planned your alignment, plan your partying.
All right. And in terms of, a lot of people say drunk, young drivers, remember, people, no drink. Well, no drinking and driving. The life you save might be the life of your own. Someone is also saying, yeah, based Miss Ingerfield, makes sense. But does she know there are many young drivers who never even did a driving exam and just bought their license? The corruption is worsening and already a bad situation. There is a certain things of a corruption, you know, alleged corruption going on at licensing office where you could buy your license, and a lot of people not getting the practice that they should need, or the proper, you know, practice and know the regulations properly on the roads, and you could just go in there and buy a license. What about that?
Very, very disappointing as well, because the men are the ones dying. 95% of all fatalities up until the age of 34, it's mainly men dying. Mm-hmm. So these people who are going in, and particularly the men I appeal to, please make sure that you're doing defensive driving and educating yourself well, because the fact is, you are the ones that are dying on the nation's roads. So it's disappointing to think that people are buying their license. The licensing office might be culpable, but so are the drivers who are carrying out the act of paying someone to buy a license.
Mm-hmm. What about the police in terms of the license officers and the police out there with the breathalyzer tests? I mean, Carnival is coming up. We're in Christmas right now, too. We have events, a lot of events. There are some people that just don't know when to stop. I know we can't be like in the States. We're very unique where we have alcohol selling 24. You know, we don't have that thing called the last call. Like, you know, in certain countries, you have the last call, where last call to the bar, if the event is finishing at 3 o'clock, Your last call will be 2, so you have at least a little hour to sober. People going right down, buying drinks, and then leaving the event. Do you think that is something that could help on, you know, having the breathalyzer sort of mostly after event so that people will know, listen, I had a sober up or something, otherwise I'll get a ticket after this event here?
Absolutely, and I encourage everybody who has a party or fete to include a sober zone.
Mm-hmm.
A sober zone is where we go and we breathalyze your patrons. So at least you are doing the responsible thing of making sure your patrons have some way to sober up. They do a breathalyzer test. If they're over the limit, they go back into the party and they spend some more time drinking water and eating. Because really and truly, in a country like Canada, they hold the party organizers responsible
mm-hmm.
when
okay.
patrons have left
mm-hmm.
the venue and they die on the roads. So we don't want to get like Canada. We don't want to get to the point that we're holding party organizers responsible. But I encourage you to have sober zones with increase in fatalities, particularly this year. 115 lives lost, all preventable, all avoidable, and everybody is responsible.
Mm-hmm.
So those who are having parties are just as responsible. We are selling tickets at a high price in a lot of cases, and we should include sober zones.
So you're saying in Canada and those places, they hold the promoters responsible if any incident, drunk driving incident happens
Absolutely.
Afterwards.
If you leave your house,
mm-hmm.
you're having a dinner party at your house, and the guests leave and someone gets into collision, not only do they investigate that collision with DNA evidence in the case of a hit and run or someone running from the scene of the accident like the driver,
mm-hmm.
but the police find themselves in your house to question you about whether that driver left under the influence of alcohol.
Wow.
So we need to bear that in mind. Those countries take road safety very seriously. They take life very seriously. I sometimes wonder if in Trinidad and Tobago we are now numb, that with all the violent crime on the roads, we become numb to death.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't realize that every life matters. Every life taken is one too many.
All right. Another thing is falling asleep on the wheel. I mean, I could talk about this personal experience, me being, you know, in the entertainment, being a DJ and stuff. Sometimes you go out there and you're driving, you know, it's good to kind of pull aside. I always walk with a bottle of water, wet my face, kind of thing, catch myself. But sometimes you do catch yourselves nodding, you know, in the passers, you know, as you're driving. That is responsible for some quite a few road fatalities as well, yes?
Yes, so Baz, make sure that you are rested well. Make sure you don't get behind that wheel, even if you have to sleep in your car, because sleep is a killer as well, of course.
Mm-hmm.
It's just as bad as drinking and driving in the case of a collision, because you're not braking. So the violent collision, the energy of that collision is going to be just as bad or worse in some cases, because if you have no barriers on a highway and you hit a concrete lamppost or a tree that has nothing around it to protect you from that energy of that collision, you know what's going to happen. You end up as a fatality. So we need to make sure that, again, we're well-rested and we listen to our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're too tired, on the road, pull aside, go into a police station, a hospital, a health center, if they're open, anywhere like that that's safe.
Yeah.
And spend a couple hours sleeping, and then you can start your journey again. Or call a friend, you know, call a friend or somebody that can take you back home safely, as well as your vehicle.
Mm-hmm. All right. And a lot of as you mentioned, the concrete lampposts, we have a lot of some of these concrete posts that sometimes they're out of place. There's one on the Diego Martin Highway out of place. I encountered one while driving down to South. This week, I believe, is just after Freeport in between Coover there, and it's out of place. And if you're not careful, you could run into that. Also, our very bad roads. A lot of accidents, I'm sure, happen because people are trying to dodge potholes and some of the bad roads that we have.
Absolutely, and that's why everybody has their responsibility. Those concrete light poles should have crash cushions around them or barriers to avoid anyone from driving into them. In most cases, they are too close to traffic, and therefore it is imperative that once again we install light poles, especially concrete light poles, to the international standard. And the utility company knows what that is. It's X amount of feet away from traffic. So there's a standard, and we need to ensure our infrastructure is planned, constructed, maintained to international standards.
Mm-hmm. What about the in terms of the lighting up of our roads? I remember there was a guy some years ago, I did an interview. He had something where he was lighting up the roads. I can't remember what it was, but you were seeing the roads. Some of our roads are very, very dark. You're going some areas, the light poles are not working. Well, is Arrive Alive doing anything to work with the Ministry of Works to at least, you know, alert them where our roads are could be more properly lit?
Well, we wish we had the funds to do what we call independent audits of our nation's roads, because certainly car ties are important. You really want to have collapsible light poles, so when you hit them, you don't get seriously injured. So if you're putting light poles near to traffic, they should be collapsible light poles, not concrete light poles. I'm seeing some concrete light poles going up that are brand new, and they are extremely dangerous. So once again, I appeal to the utility company and to the Ministry of Works and Transport to install crash cushions and barriers around those light poles.
Mm-hmm. Of course, folks, we're talking to Ms. Sharon Inglefield of Arrive Alive. I've been doing some very, very good work. So, like, anything coming up for this Christmas into carnival seasons? I know I was seeing Arrive Alive in the past at some events. Any plans for 2025?
Well, our usual plans are that we have our sober zones at parties. All the parties that invite us, the corporate clients that invite us, because they understand their responsibility as a stakeholder of road safety. We also have our drivers rehab to try and train the mindset of existing drivers so they don't die on our nation's roads or don't kill other people on our nation's roads, passengers. There's been an increase in passengers. And that's the sad part. There's been a decrease in drivers, but a huge increase in pedestrian as well as passenger road user. So that's extremely sad. We have our award ceremony for those first responders who are doing yeoman service to all of us in TNT, sometimes without gloves, sometimes without the tools they needed to attend to the victims on the roads in the carnage that they're seeing, the serious collisions, the injuries and fatalities. I mean, when these increases take part, I always think of the first ones. Responders as well, like the fire services, the ambulance, the police, very, very hard job. And then, of course, we do our World Day of Remembrance for road traffic victims. So we do a walk around the Savannah, and we encourage all the families and friends to do that walk. It's always the third Sunday of every November. So the award ceremony for road responders is a big event for us, as well as the World Day of Remembrance. And we always thank one of the multinationals, Woodside Energy in particular, who sponsors those two big events. As you know, we do a lot of advocacy. So the media is one of our big stakeholders to make sure that we continue to educate and change the mindset of all stakeholders in TNT to encourage them to live up to their responsibility, whether it's enforcement, whether it's education, whether it's training, whether it's the roads, engineering, making sure the roads are in good order and the infrastructure up to international standards. Vehicles, importation of vehicles, making sure that Trinidad and Tobago don't become a dumping ground for used cars and making sure that all cars are imported in good order. And, of course, the first responders, with all the tools they need. They really do a lot of work and have to pay for it themselves in some cases. I mean, they always call me from time to time and say, Mrs. Inglefield, help us get gloves or help us get this. And it's very sad, very disappointing that in 2024, our fire services in particular don't have gloves, you know. So very sad. And of course, we encourage the evaluation of data to do the audit of our nation's roads, to evaluate the crash sites of repeated collisions. They are very, very important that we identify these hot spots, as they're known, that have repeated collisions, or repeated serious collisions, and ensure that we fix those gaps, whether it's an engineering issue or whether it is just a badly designed roadway. So it's very, very important that we continue to evaluate the data.
All right. Now, I know we don't hear a lot about a lot of elderly and senior citizens getting into accidents, but sometimes you see some elderly folks driving on the roads, and some people just wonder, well, why that person still driving? But should there be a lock-off point for a senior citizen driving?
I think what they should be bad is that they should be medicals and eye tests, because I am 64. I consider myself a fairly good driver, but I've had people crashing into me that are far younger, you know? So I think it has to do with the changing of your mindset, passing of a medical and passing of an eye test. And of course, if there is psycho-evaluation, even better. So that needs to be incorporated in the licensing system before we're given the privilege to be back on the roads when we're renewing our licenses.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Sharon Inglefield, for your time. And do continue your good works out there, and all the best.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.